and his girl leave, I have to get back to my guests. Lady Stanhope marched back up the stairs as her butler advanced out of the shadows. He couldn't have stopped Gabe from going upstairs, but Gabe had no more questions for Lady Stanhope. He did have one for the butler, however, but it was not the question I expected.
Do you know Mr. Ludlow?
The butler hadn't expected it either. Perhaps, like me, he thought Gabe would want to know if his mistress was indeed home last night as she claimed. Caught by surprise, his stiff exterior slipped off, and he opened and closed his mouth before stammering a response.
This way, sir.
He indicated the door. We left and headed down the stairs, past the second set of steep steps that led to the basement service area. Gabe's pace slowed, and I thought he might head down to question the servants. Huggins clearly knew the name Ludlow, I said.
He did, but he's too loyal to say anything. We'll question the other servants.
He caught my hand as I stepped toward the basement stairs.
Not that way.
Still holding my hand, he led me to the pavement. He finally let go, but the thrilling sensation of his touch remained, and it lingered for a long time afterward. We drove into the rear lane behind the row of townhouses. Coach houses and garages lined one side, while doors on the other side led to service corridors at the rear of each of the townhouses. Gabe parked the Vauxhall and we located the garage belonging to Lord Stanhope. The door was locked, however. The chauffeur must be out. We knocked on the door to the main house, and a young maid answered. She blinked up at Gabe, a blush infusing her cheeks. That was my cue to step back and let him charm her. He smiled, earning a smile from her in return.
I'm Gabriel Glass, and this is Miss Ashe. We work for Scotland Yard on magical investigations.
Her eyes widened.
Are you a detective?
A consultant.
Like Sherlock Holmes,
she said on a breath. He laughed softly.
If my powers of deduction were as good as his, I'd have solved the case already. I am a fan of Conan Doyle's books.
So am I.
She leaned a shoulder against the doorframe, lulled by the friendly banter.
Agatha Clegg, at your service.
Have you worked here long, Miss Clegg?
2 years.
Do you know of a fellow named Ludlow?
She straightened.
Is he in trouble?
Not at all. I think he can help me clear up a few things. You know him?
She nodded.
I used to work here. He was the cook until 4 months ago.
The cook? I would never have guessed that.
Why did he leave? Gabe asked.
He wanted his wages increased. The mistress refused, so he left in a huff. Said he could get better work somewhere else. He probably could too, on account of him being a magician.
A magician? What kind?
She looked at him as if it were a foolish question.
Cooking, of course. Pastries, specifically.
Do you know if he found work in another household?
She glanced over her shoulder to the dark corridor beyond.
The others reckon he didn't. He thought he could walk right into a better job than this one, maybe even work for one of them fancy hotels. But the mistress refused to give him a reference. Who can blame her? He said he wouldn't lower himself to working for the likes of Lady Stanhope again. Some of the names he called her, it makes me blush just thinking about them. Not that he said them to her face, mind, but with an attitude like that, who'd want him? The posh kitchens will have their pick of cooks, so a greedy old curmudgeon like him wouldn't be top of the list, magic or not.
Gabe thanked her and doffed his cap. She nibbled on her lower lip, batted her eyelashes, and gave him a smile. I even heard her sigh as we walked off. Gabe didn't seem to notice that she'd been flirting with him. Perhaps he was so used to it that flirtations no longer had any meaning. I wondered if women flirted with him when he was with Ivy, or if it was just me. The maid would have known from the plain way I dressed that I wasn't his equal. One look at Ivy and everyone would know she was his intended. The two of them were so well matched that it was obvious. Gabe opened the motor car's passenger door for me.
One more stop, then I'll take you back to the library. Is that all right with you?
Of course.
He leaned on the door instead of closing it. He gave me a smile that I'd come to think of as unique to him, a little bit secretive, a little smug, and very alluring.
You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Surprisingly, yes.
Why surprising?
Because I didn't know I had an adventurous side. Inquisitive, yes, but usually I simply read if I want to learn something.
You didn't interview people when you were a journalist?
He showed no sign that my past career bothered him. I still felt guilty for the way it was exposed, however. It looked like I'd been trying to hide it. I supposed I had. All the time, but I never enjoyed it. This is different. This has purpose. Well, a different purpose than my journalism career, that is.
If you want to continue, we can look at having you put on as a paid consultant for Scotland Yard. That way we can work together more.
He punctuated that rather dramatic statement by closing the door. I waited as he turned the crank handle to start the engine, somewhat dazed by his suggestion. My initial thought was to smile, but it quickly faded as reality sank in. It was an absurd idea. Scotland Yard didn't need me. I had no expertise to offer. Gabe was just humouring me, charming me as he'd charmed the maid. It was easy to get sucked into his sphere when I lowered my guard. I needed to remember to keep it up in his presence. Daisy had warned me that men who had everything handed to them in life didn't understand the realities of the world for the rest of us. In this instance, she might be right. Mr. Ludlow lived in a flat located in an old building in a Soho street. At night, the area bustled with theatre activity, but in the mid-afternoon, daylight showed it to be grubby, with rubbish filling the gutters and faded theatre posters peeling off walls. I just closed my door when a short man lounging against a red postbox hissed at us.
Willie, Gabe said, striding toward him, her.
She pushed up the brim of her hat with a finger, revealing her glare, directed at me.
What's she doing here?
Helping with the investigation, Gabe said.
Helping how?
Never mind that. Have you got anything to report?
She sniffed and dragged her gaze away from me.
He hasn't left the entire time I've been here, but I spoke to his neighbor when I arrived. She said he had a visitor early this morning. The neighbor was returning home after a night out, and it seemed real odd for a well-dressed woman to be making calls on an old man like Ludlow at that time. She didn't catch a name, but the description matches Lady Stanhope. She handed Ludlow some money.
Did the neighbor say how it was between them? Did they argue?
She didn't mention it, so I reckon they didn't.
Good work. We're going up to speak to him now.
He went to walk off, but turned back.
The neighbor gave that information up easily. Why?
She rolled her eyes.
Don't worry, she wasn't tricking me. She liked me. She reckons I'm interesting.
Gabe arched his brows.
She did. She's an actress, and you know what they're like.
She winked at him.
They're up for anything. And you got to admit, a handsome woman with experience is mighty compelling to girls like that. We made arrangements to meet up later tonight.
Very well. But if the information turns out to be false, I'm blaming you.
She clapped him on the shoulder.
Trust me, Gabe.
She watched him walk toward the door, then turned to me.
Something bothering you, Sylvia?
I quickly shook my head.
No. Does me being with a woman shock you?
Not at all. My best friend is an artist. They're probably even more audacious than actors and, American cowgirls. I wasn't sure if that was a real occupation, but calling her a cowboy didn't seem right.
Audacious, huh?
Her lips pursed.
You ain't gonna win me over with empty flattery.
I'm not trying to win you over. There's no need. She narrowed her gaze further, but thankfully didn't say anything more. It wasn't until I walked off that I remembered I didn't want to annoy her too much. Professor Nash said she might recall the silver magician Lady Rycroft had met years ago. He'd also suggested Cyclops might know. Later, I would ask Gabe where I could find him. Mr. Ludlow answered Gabe's knock, then immediately tried to shut the door again upon seeing us. Gabe forced it back and muscled his way into the flat. Mr. Ludlow wasn't intimidated, however. He stood his ground, chin thrust forward, and demanded to know what we wanted.
Answers, Gabe said. I will speak to you, but not her. I don't answer to subordinates.
Then you can speak to her, because Miss Ash is not your or anyone's subordinate.
Mr. Ludlow made a scoffing sound.
She's a maid.
I'm a librarian, I snapped. And I consult part-time for Scotland Yard alongside Mr. Glass. If you cannot accept that, then it is your problem, not mine, particularly if you refuse to answer our questions. Refusal will look very bad for you.
I tried to dampen the rush of energy coursing through me, lest I break out into an immature smile of triumph, but it wasn't easy. I managed to keep my reaction to a toss of my head and squaring of my shoulders. Gabe kept a straight face.
Now that my colleague has made you aware of the importance of honesty, can you tell us where you were last night?
Mr. Ludlow hesitated, and I thought he would refuse to answer, but then he said,
Here, why?
Someone tried to steal a magical painting from Burlington House. They failed.
I'm old, Mr. Glass. Do you think I could steal something large and heavy?
How do you know it was large and heavy?
I guessed. It must have been the seascape.
Are you guessing the seascape because you know it's magician-made?
How would I know that?
You're a magician. You felt the magic in it.
Mr. Ludlow's throat moved with his heavy swallow.
You're mistaken. Whoever told you that is lying.
Everyone in Lord Stanhope's household knows you're a bakery magician. It wasn't a secret. You left there in a huff and claimed you were going to find a better job elsewhere. So how did you end up as a butler working for the Royal Academy of Arts?
I did not leave in a huff. My departure was amicable. That's how I got the job at the Academy. Lady Stanhope arranged it. Would she do that if we parted on poor terms?
Gabe was unfazed by Mr. Ludlow throwing the maid's evidence back at us.
She may have arranged it so that you could identify magical art at the exhibition, then steal it for her. Perhaps you didn't like being used that way. Once installed as butler, you refused to do what she wanted, but then she talked you into it. This morning, she came here to pay you for your efforts.
Mr. Ludlow looked equally unconcerned by Gabe's accusations.
You said the attempt to steal the painting failed. If your theory is correct, why would she pay me for something I failed to do?
It was a good point. Lady Stanhope also made a good point when she said she liked to display her magical artworks. I believed her. She seemed like someone who wanted people to admire her possessions. Stolen paintings would need to be hidden away. Despite my doubts, Lady Stanhope and Mr. Ludlow were still top of my suspect list. They were certainly up to something that night I'd seen him arguing with her at Burlington House. I voiced my doubts to Gabe as we took the elevator down to the ground floor.
I agree on all points, he said. While we can't see a motive, that doesn't mean there isn't one. Like you, I don't trust them.
We didn't discover much.
On the contrary, I discovered you're tougher than you look.
My face heated.
My temper emerges when I'm pushed too far. I shouldn't have said anything.
You absolutely should have. Ludlow deserved it.
We reached the ground floor. He opened the elevator door, then the outer cage door, and allowed me to step out ahead of him.
Remind me never to get on your bad side.
I doubt you could.
I brushed past him, very aware of our closeness, of his strength and height, and the way he watched me from beneath lowered lids as if trying to hide his gaze. But I would always be aware of it on me. Gabe drove me back to Crooked Lane. He offered to collect my luggage from the library and drive me to Daisy's flat, but I insisted it wasn't necessary. I didn't want to take up his time when he was in the midst of an investigation.
If you can't find a decent boarding house on short notice, you're more than welcome to stay with us again, he said. Just until you get back on your feet, of course.
Thank you, but I'll be fine. Daisy will help me. People have trouble saying no to her.
He laughed softly.
Try telling Alex that.
I passed through the entry into the lane just as light rain began to fall. I ducked my head into my coat collar to keep my face dry and hurried toward the library, concentrating on maintaining my balance on the slippery cobbles. It was why I didn't see Tommy Allen until it was too late. Chapter 15. Tommy Allen lurched out of the shadows, blocking my path. I yelped and stepped back, but his hand whipped out and caught my wrist before I could turn and run.
Scream and I'll strike you.
The scar pulled his mouth into a gruesome, lopsided grimace.
Go on, try it.
His breath reeked of alcohol and cigarettes, and his eyes were red-rimmed from exhaustion. My insides recoiled. I wanted to vomit. I wanted to scream. I wanted to lash out. But I did none of those things. Despite his drunkenness, his body was tense, ready for me this time. My mother's combat lessons wouldn't save me now. Her other lessons on the dangers of men were also useless. I should have listened to her, should have kept alert as I walked alone through a quiet lane. But I'd been on another plane after spending most of the afternoon in Gabe's company. My senses had been tuned to him and the way he made me feel good about myself and not my surroundings. My mother would have warned me not to let my guard down around Gabe, although she would have meant it as a warning about him and not other men who might be lying in wait. Strike me, and I won't help you. I sounded braver than I felt. I wondered if Tommy could feel me trembling through his touch.
Help me?
He sneered.
You can help me by staying away. I know you've been looking for me. I know you want to pin the theft on me.
He only wanted to ask you some questions. If you can prove you were elsewhere.
It wasn't me. I didn't do it. What does an ugly, deformed soldier know about beauty and art?
He released me and wiped his mouth on his shoulder, but not before I saw it twist with emotion.
You women are all the same. You see this scar and you hear the way I talk and you peg me into a hole I can't climb out of. Don't you wonder why men like me drink all the time and lash out at you?
He was in pain, but not the physical kind. Not only had he been permanently disfigured and traumatized by war, but he'd also come home to a woman who didn't love him enough to look past his injury. He lost his fiance, his home, his looks, and now his livelihood. He was also staring down the barrel of losing his freedom if he were found guilty of the theft. No wonder he was desperate. No wonder he attacked me and not Gabe or Alex. I was a woman, and a woman had recently broken his heart and his spirit. But he needed to know violence wasn't the way out of his desperation. I gentled my voice. My mother used to warn me about men. Not any specific man or group of men, all of them. She would tell me none could be trusted. Not a policeman, priest, or politician. The only man she said I could trust was my brother, but every other man would try to hurt me. Tommy didn't look at me, but I knew I had his attention from the way he scuffed the toe of his boot into the ground. It took me a long time to realize she was wrong. That not every man wants to do terrible things to me. Some days I do think she might even have been right. But then I remember the employer who lets me work without looking over my shoulder, and the friend of a friend who gave me his painting, and a new acquaintance who is patient and kind, and includes me in his investigation when I have no relevant skills.
Does this story have a point?
What I'm trying to tell you is, I know now that not all men are the same, just as not all women are either. We're not all like your former fiancé. Some of us would give you a chance if you let us.
You done now?
Not yet. Violence towards women isn't going to change their opinion of you. It's only going to reinforce it. The rain started to come down harder. We were both getting thoroughly wet. I won't lecture you. You're intelligent enough to understand that I speak the truth. He wiped the back of his hand across his jaw and grunted in response. No man likes to be lectured by a woman, particularly a man who doesn't have a very high opinion of us to begin with. But I gave him credit for letting me get to the end of my speech with nothing more than a grunt of defiance.
I found your address on your employee papers in the manager's office, he said. That's how I knew where you lived.
I nodded.
I was angry with you, he went on.
You accuse me of being involved in the theft.
The police questioned everyone. There were many suspects at that point, but then we discovered that you were living in the very storeroom the Delaroche was stolen from.
So you thought me guilty because I wanted somewhere warm and dry to sleep?
I admit, we've made assumptions. But you've made them too. Another grunt.
I didn't do it. If you want to blame someone, blame that fancy lady and the butler. I overheard them arguing on your last night working there. He was angry with her for not paying him.
Go on.
He told her to cough up or he'll expose her. Those were his exact words.
They definitely argued about money then, and this morning Lady Stanhope did cough up. If she wasn't paying Ludlow to point out the magical paintings, what was she paying him for? Where were you last night? I asked. His head jerked up.
Why?
Someone tried to steal another painting. He advanced, hands balled into fists at his sides.
It wasn't me.
I was a fool if I thought I'd made a connection with this man. He still didn't trust me, and I certainly shouldn't trust him. I backed away. Did someone pay you to steal it? He bared his teeth in a snarl.
No!
I swallowed. Nobody thinks you are entirely to blame. It must have been a magician who identified the magic in both paintings, and we know you're not one. Tommy stopped, and I wondered if I'd been wrong, if he was a magician. My statement had certainly intrigued him, but he didn't correct me.
I was with someone all last night,
was all he said.
She can vouch for me.
You need to tell the police. They'll follow it up. He spat onto the cobblestones.
I hate the pigs.
Mr. Glass isn't a policeman. Come with me, we'll call on him together and you can give him the details of your alibi in person. He wiped his hand across his mouth, stroking the end of his scar as if he was still unused to it.
So you can trap me?
He huffed a humorless laugh, then shook his head. He strode off and was soon gone from sight. I didn't bother to call after him. I headed to the library, where I found the professor reading on the sofa in the ground floor nook, a cup of tea on the table beside him.
Miss Ash, you're all wet. Come in and get dry before you catch your death.
He stoked the glowing coals in the grate to life and scooped more on top from the scuttle.
There now, would you like a cup of tea?
After downing a cup of tea and some cucumber sandwiches, I was nice and dry. Despite the late hour, I knew I couldn't immediately go to Daisy's and look for new accommodation. I had to see Gabe first and tell him about Tommy Allen. Some things were too important to put off. I wasn't visiting because I wanted to see him again. So I told myself. Unfortunately, Gabe wasn't at home. I told Bristow that I would telephone later, but the butler insisted I wait in the drawing room as he didn't expect Gabe to be long. It ended up being an hour. Bristow brought tea and scones while I waited. I would have refused had he asked me. I wasn't going to need dinner later if I ate them on top of the sandwiches I'd just consumed at the library, but I find I couldn't turn them down. They smelled delicious. The tray trembled in Bristow's hand, so I took it from him with a smile and set it down on the table. He flexed his gloved fingers and gave me an apologetic look.
I'm not as steady as I used to be.
Have you worked for the Glass family long?
40 years as a butler, another 8 before that as footman.
No wonder he looked worn out. There's no footman now?
Not at present. We lost the last one to the war.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry for your loss.
You misunderstand. He survived the war. He resigned from his position here 4 years ago when he signed up and didn't want to return once the war was over. We've been unable to replace him, despite advertising. Most of the young men who survived aren't interested in service anymore. They consider it beneath them.
He sighed.
The war changed everything.
It did indeed. His shoulders stooped forward even more, which may have been his attempt at a bow. It was difficult to tell. As he exited the drawing room, Willie ambled in, thumbs tucked into her trouser waistband. I silently groaned. I'd rather be alone with a drunk Tommy Allen than Gabe's cousin. She took one look at me and stepped in front of the butler as he tried to leave. She lowered her voice, but didn't lower it enough. I could still hear her.
You shouldn't feed them, Bresto. It encourages them to stay.
The only sign he disliked her comment was a thinning of his lips. It wouldn't have mattered if he reproved her, however. She didn't seem to care about anyone else's opinion. I reached for the teapot, only to pull back. Now that the hostess had arrived, she ought to pour. People who lived in houses like this one were usually sticklers for the correct order of things. I didn't know if that applied to the hostesses who dressed like men and spoke with American accents, but I thought it best to err on the side of caution with Willie. That was why I bit my tongue instead of retorting that I wasn't a stray cat and wasn't staying. It was best to pretend I hadn't heard her. Willie sprawled in one of the armchairs, her legs apart, and glared at me. She made no attempt to pour the tea, so I did it myself. Bristow had brought in four cups, and I offered her one. She didn't respond. I took that as a refusal and set it down near her. I poured another for myself. The sound of pouring liquid seemed as loud as a waterfall in the silent room. I tried gently placing a sugar cube into the cup and stirring it, but the plop and clink still made me wince. I decided not to help myself to the scones and sat back with my teacup. The moment I settled, Willie leaned forward and picked up a scone. She slathered it with jam and cream, then took a large bite. Dollops of cream oozed from the corners of her mouth. She licked them away with flicks of her tongue. I tried to ignore the sound of her chewing. It wasn't easy, particularly when she glared at me again. She didn't blink, didn't look away, just watched me as if I were an annoying creature she could barely tolerate. I searched desperately for something to say to break the ice. Fortunately, she hadn't completely frightened my mind into seizing up, and I remembered something. Professor Nash told me you might remember a silver magician that Gabe's mother met years ago. He couldn't recall her name, but perhaps you do? Her chewing slowed. She stared at me. Then her gaze dropped to her teacup. She picked it up. I don't. Never mind. Perhaps Cyclops remembers her.
He won't.
I simply smiled and let the matter go. I picked up my teacup and sipped. Dear Lord, please send Gabe home now, or, at the very least, send Bristow back in. Unfortunately, neither event occurred, and I was left very much on my own with one of the most difficult people I'd ever met. It was time to employ some of the tactics I'd learned as a budding journalist. The profession had never quite suited me. I was shy around strangers, particularly men. I preferred research that involved reading books, not the kind where I had to interview subjects. An older journalist at the newspaper had seen my difficulty and taken me under his wing. He didn't teach me how to overcome my shyness, no one can teach that. But he showed me how I could pretend to be confident. I got quite good at it, and even employed the tactics in circles outside of work. That fake confidence was how I'd met and made friends with Daisy and found employment at the Philosophical Society Library. At its core, the tactic involved asking the subjects questions about themselves. Most people like to talk about their own lives and interests, and if I showed that I was listening, it would go a long way to getting them to warm to me. Was it difficult, leaving your life behind in America? Her only response was a narrowing of her eyes. Do you still have family there? She sipped her tea, watching me over the rim of the cup. She was closed tighter than the mayor I tried to interview after my newspaper accused him of corruption. Did you come here so Lord Rycroft could take up his position as the heir to the barony?
Quit the chit-chat, I ain't buying it.
Buying what?
You ain't interested in me any more than I'm interested in you, so quit pretending.
I looked down at the teacup in my lap. Perhaps I should leave. It would be easier. I placed the teacup and saucer on the table and rose. I think it's best if I go.
Aye.
But
I'd like you to know that I'm not pretending. I am interested. I've never met anyone like you before. I don't know why you've decided to dislike me, but
I got reasons.
I waited. For a long moment, I thought the silent tactic wouldn't work, but she eventually gave in. Most people usually do.
I got good senses.
She tapped the side of her nose.
And the more you stick around, the more I sense trouble brewing.
I assure you, I won't be around after today. I'm here to pass on some information from a suspect, then I'll leave. She snorted and shook her head.
It's not a lie, Willie.
I intend to go very soon.
I believe y'all intend to. But Gabe will come home and he'll be all gentlemanly and insist you stay again because it's getting late.
She glanced at the clock on the mantel.
We both know you ain't gonna find new accommodation now.
I'll stay with my friend Daisy.
Gabe will insist, she said again.
With a resigned sigh, she ordered me to sit with the point of her finger at the sofa.
You want to know why I don't like you?
I sat. Yes.
It ain't personal. Well, maybe it is in a way. The thing is, Gabe ain't himself these days. He ain't been himself since the war. I want him to be like he used to be.
One side of her mouth quirked with her half-smile.
He was fun. We had some wild nights, gambling and going to parties. Not when his parents were in London, mind, just when they were at the estate. They don't know half of what Gabe, Alex, and me got up to.
Cyclops had said Gabe was different now, and perhaps a better person because he'd settled down. But Willie clearly didn't think so, so I wouldn't say anything. I wanted to keep her talking while she was in the mood for sharing.
The war affected men in different ways, she went on. Some came back scared, a shell of the man they used to be. Some men wanted to drink away their sorrows, and others want to have a good time and forget. Gabe came back straight as a die. He wanted to be a good son, a good man, a good citizen. He wanted to have a purpose, as if he'd been saved for a reason. So he became a consultant for Scotland Yard. Doesn't gamble no more, doesn't drink to excess. He gets to bed at a decent hour and accepts that one day he'll be the next Lord Rycroft. He reckons putting aside his wild past and settling down is the path to happiness. And maybe it is, for him.
She pulled a face. Clearly it wasn't her idea of happiness.
That's why he got himself a fiance. Ivy is his future. He chose her because she makes him happy.
She shrugged, as if this was obvious.
She's steady and good, and she's just what he needs after years of turmoil and pressure. I like her too, and I don't like many folk. Ivy isn't after him for his money like all the other women were back in the day. I had a real tough time protecting Gabe from the gold diggers. But Ivy has family money. She'll be set for life no matter who she marries. So I feel all right about letting her marry Gabe.
She might as well have called me a gold digger. While I ought to be offended, I found I couldn't be. She was protecting Gabe in the only way she knew how. She probably would have preferred to stand beside him on the battlefield, but women weren't allowed. She wouldn't be the first person left behind on the home front who'd found a different way to protect her loved one. As I had done with Tommy Allen, I gentled my voice.
You're mistaken if you think I'm trying to break up their relationship. I'm not. I hardly know him. My interest in Gabe began because he could help me learn about my family's background. It continued because he involved me in the investigation. Gabe is a good man. I like him and I agree with you. He deserves to be happy. Ivy seems very nice too. I hope they have a happy future together.
She eyed me closely.
You're a little like her. Oh? You're not frightened off. The others scared too easy. That's why they weren't good enough. They didn't love him enough.
I picked up my teacup and sipped to hide my smug smile. I seemed to have passed some sort of test she'd set for me. I could picture the poor girls of Gabe's youth trying to get to know him better, only to come up against his fierce cousin. A fierce cousin who spoke of love.
She was full of contradictions. Somehow, knowing the reasons for her odd behavior helped settle my nerves. Hopefully we could mend the divide between us now that my intentions were clear.
I want to reiterate, I said. Gabe and I are friends, nothing more.
Willie still scowled, however. It would take more than words for her to believe me. It was an enormous relief to see Gabe and Alex walk in. It must have been written all over my face because both cast me sympathetic looks.
I saw your bags in the hall, Gabe said. Is something wrong?
I needed to pass on a piece of information.
I hope you haven't been waiting long.
Willie thought he was speaking to her.
Too long?
Gabe poured two cups of tea while Alex helped himself to a scone. He bit into it without bothering with jam and cream, closing his eyes and sighing deeply.
This is so good. Just what a starving man needs.
Starving?
Willie snorted.
You ate a big lunch. You're gonna be as fat as your father if you ain't careful.
He's solid, not fat.
Gabe offered to top up my cup, but I declined.
What did you need to tell me?
Nothing that couldn't have waited,
Willie piped up. Considering she hadn't heard what I needed to say, she couldn't know that. But now that I'd thought it through, I realized she was right. It wasn't important. It could have waited until tomorrow.
Tommy Allen was waiting for me in Crooked Lane.
Gabe swore under his breath.
I should have come with you.
We just talked. He told me he has an alibi for last night.
Ha, Willie barked.
You can't believe pigs will like that.
Did he give you the details?
Gabe asked.
I shook my head. He claimed he was with a woman. He also told me he overheard Ludlow demand that Lady Stanhope pay him. Cough up, was the phrase he used.
Gabe nodded thoughtfully.
It seems more and more likely that Ludlow was telling Lady Stanhope which paintings were magical for a fee. That puts her squarely in the mix for the theft of the Delaroche and the attempted theft of the Arthur Partridge seascape. Alex, Willie, can you report on their movements this afternoon?
They each gave an account of the comings and goings of Lady Stanhope and Ludlow. Both were brief and provided no more clues. When she finished her account, Willie added,
Now that Sylvia's given her information, she should get going. Didn't you say your friend was waiting for you, Sylvia?
Yes, she is.
I rose. Thank you for your hospitality, Willie. I enjoyed our chat.
All three sets of eyes narrowed. Then Alex laughed.
You're a joker.
Gabe smiled.
Stay for dinner, Sylvia. In fact, you should stay the night. I can't have you roaming around in the dark looking for a lodging house that might have a vacancy. Not with Tommy Allen still on the loose.
I can sleep at Daisy's.
It's too cramped for two. Stay here. You can have your old bedroom.
He made it sound like I was a regular lodger. The thought must have occurred to Willie, too. She looked angry, but a quelling glare from Gabe had her snapping her mouth closed. She must respect him a lot to keep her opinion to herself. I doubted she was someone who did that for just anyone.
It's the least we can do,
Alex said with a childish smirk of satisfaction aimed at Willie.
You've been a great help in this investigation, Sylvia. And I'd wager Daisy's breakfasts aren't half as good as ours. Mrs. Ling puts on a delicious spread.
Willie opened her mouth again, but shut it once more upon another quelling glare, this time from Alex. Gabe tugged on the bell pull to summon Bristow, then asked him to inform Mrs. Bristow that I would be staying the night.
We made the assumption that Miss Ash would require the spare room again, sir. Mrs. Bristow has already made it up. I'll take up Miss Ash's luggage now.
No need, I'll do it.
As Bristow gave a nod, he caught sight of Willie glaring at him. His features hardly moved, but somehow all his wrinkles formed what could almost be called a smile. Willie muttered something under her breath. Gabe invited me to leave the drawing room ahead of him. I waited while he fetched my bags from the entrance hall, and together we headed upstairs.
I don't let Bristow carry anything heavier than a tray anymore. He hates admitting it, but he's getting on in years and can't do the things he used to.
He must be nearing retirement age. His eyes widened and he glanced around.
Don't mention that to him, or to Mrs. Bristow. Neither of them will entertain the thought of stopping. They've refused, even though there's a cottage set aside for them on the estate. Mrs. Bristow has a maid to help her, but Bristow needs a footman.
He told me you've had trouble finding one.
We'll keep looking.
He deposited my bags inside the bedroom and was about to leave when he spotted a small blue gauze pouch tied with a white ribbon on the pillow. A card was attached.
What's that?
I picked it up and sniffed. Rose petals. I read the card. It's from Mrs. Bristow, welcoming me back. How lovely. She's very sweet. Last night, she left a warming pan in the bed. It was very thoughtful of her.
Odd. She doesn't do that for anyone else.
He informed me that dinner would be at 8, then left, closing the door behind him. I wondered if he was going to telephone Ivy to tell her I was staying overnight again. At 8, I headed to the dining room, familiar with the layout of the house now. The meal was a casual affair, with just the residents sitting down to eat. Ivy didn't join us, and her name wasn't mentioned all night. Once dinner was over, Willie announced she was heading out.
The SSO are playing at a club in Kingley Street tonight.
SSO? I asked.
Southern Syncopated Orchestra,
Willie said with barely disguised impatience.
It's a jazz band.
I like the SSO,
Alex said.
Come with me.
He hesitated, most likely on my account. Don't worry about me, I said. You should go.
Would you like to go too, Sylvia?
Gabe asked. Willie looked like she wanted to throttle him. She didn't want to socialize with me. I put her out of her misery. I'll be quite all right here with my book. After a little more discussion, Gabe decided to stay home while Alex would go with Willie to the club. They departed at 10:30, which Gabe assured me was an early hour. Sometimes the music and dancing didn't get into full swing until 2 or 3 a.m. Although I had my own books to reread, Gabe offered to show me his library. I tried to contain my excitement, but the sight of so many books packed into the shelves elicited a small gasp. I turned slowly and gazed up at the shelves, my skin prickling with the knowledge and possibility contained within the pages. There were shelves on all the walls, except where there was a fireplace and windows, all filled with books of varying sizes. On closer inspection, I realized they were also on various topics.
Are any about magic?
I asked. Gabe joined me and removed a book with a blue cover from a shelf.
No, the glass library has all of those. These are books collected by my grandfather during his travels. He traveled widely.
He showed me the book.
This is one of his journals, written before he met my grandmother in America. It covers the time he spent in Egypt.
The book wasn't just an account of each day, although it did include that. It contained sketches of the places and people he encountered, tickets to shows he'd seen, or a leaf from an interesting native plant. A photograph of him standing beside a camel looked remarkably like Gabe. The men in your family all look alike. I closed the book.
May I borrow this to read?
Of course. You do realize that means you'll need to return it, which in turn means you'll have to come back here.
He leaned a shoulder against the bookshelf and gave me a crooked smile.
I overheard you assure Willie you won't need to return after tonight.
Ah, yes. She seemed to need the assurance. His smile vanished.
Don't let her scare you.
She doesn't. I know she's merely trying to protect you.
She's the one who needs protecting, usually from herself. She still thinks she's 20 years old and bulletproof.
His gaze shifted to a folded newspaper on the central table.
Did she accuse you of spying on me to gather information for an article?
Not this time. Perhaps she believed me this morning when I denied it. He remained silent but didn't look convinced. Do you believe me, Gabe? He offered a reassuring smile.
Of course.
Good, I murmured.
Why good?
I pretended to study the journal's blue cover to avoid looking him in the eye. I lifted a shoulder in a shrug. Because I don't want you to think poorly of me. He reached out, as if to touch my shoulder, but diverted his hand and rested it on the bookshelf instead. His finger caressed one of the spines. I didn't dare look at his face and instead concentrated on the journal in my hand.
I can't,
he said quietly.
I mean, I don't think poorly of you. Quite the opposite.
He cleared his throat and lowered his arm to his side. He took a small step back, away from me. I'm glad we had this discussion then. It was said lightly, as if his words had not made my heart thud wildly. I think I'll retire. Good night, Gabe. I stepped around him only to pause and look up at a high shelf. One of the books had caught my eye. What's that one about? The one with the faded green spine with the decorative border? It was too high for me, and even Gabe had to stand on his toes to retrieve it. He didn't need to be so close to me to do so, however. I could have moved away too. But I did not. I liked being near him. He pulled the book off the shelf and handed it to me, but did not immediately let go. We faced each other over the top of it, neither of us looking away to break the spell that enveloped us. I was drawn to him, sucked into the depths of his sea-green eyes, overwhelmed by his masculinity and good looks, and something baser that I couldn't explain. Having the undivided attention of this man was a heady, dizzying experience. Gabe suddenly drew in a sharp breath and stepped away. We both let go of the book at the same time. I caught it before it fell on the floor and hugged it to my chest.
Good catch, he said.
Good night, Gabe.
Good night, Sylvia.
I hurried out of the library with both books. I didn't even know what the green one was about. It didn't matter. The topic was irrelevant. The book was irrelevant. I'd only asked him to retrieve it because it meant he'd have to stand close to me to do so, and that had led to the moment of madness. It hadn't been a conscious decision to ask him to get it, but what else could have led me to do so? Gabe was not a free man, and I was an utter fool for staying here again. It was tantamount to throwing myself at him. My mother would have been horrified. I simply felt ashamed. Chapter 16. I couldn't sleep, so read the book with the green cover. It was about birds, native to North America, written 60 years ago. It was surprisingly interesting. I fell asleep a little before dawn, the open book on my chest, and woke to the distant sound of the telephone ringing. It was almost 8. For me, that was late. I quickly dressed and went downstairs to find Gabe returning to the dining room for breakfast. He looked grave.
Cyclops just telephoned, he said. He was called out to Wapping a few hours ago. A body was found floating in the river. It's been identified as Tommy Allen.
I sat heavily on one of the chairs, not quite able to believe it. Poor Tommy. Does Cyclops know what happened? He poured coffee from the pot at the sideboard and handed a cup to me. I clutched it in both hands, but didn't sip.
There were signs of a fight, as well as a laceration on the back of the head, which was probably the fatal blow. Cyclops will know more after the autopsy.
I shivered.
I'm sorry, he murmured. That was a little too much information.
It's all right, but it just occurred to me that I was one of the last people to see him alive.
It's a sobering thought.
He sat at the table opposite me. He'd already started breakfast, but it was unfinished. He pushed the plate away, his appetite gone.
Did he say anything to you yesterday? Anything that might suggest who he was going to see last night, or where he was going?
I tried to recreate the conversation in my head. Tommy told me he'd been with a woman on the night of the attempted theft, but he'd not given any details about her. Nor had he mentioned anyone else.
But he had given me a small clue in his reaction to something I said to him. I mentioned the fact that a magician had identified both paintings as being magician-made, someone who wasn't necessarily an art magician but could be talented in another discipline. His expression changed, and he left in a hurry.
Gabe sat forward. You think he realized who that magician is?
It's very likely. My gaze connected with his, and we both spoke the name at the same time.
Ludlow.
Gabe pulled his plate close again and picked up his knife and fork.
We'll pay him a visit after breakfast.
I wasn't sure if he was referring to me accompanying him or Alex. He didn't elaborate until after we'd finished eating.
We'll meet in the entrance hall in 15 minutes. Will that give you enough time?
You want me to go with you?
Of course. This is as much your investigation now as mine. Besides, if I've learned anything over the years, it's to not interrogate suspects alone.
And you don't want to wake Alex?
He gave a sly grin. According to Bristow, Alex didn't come home last night, nor did Willie.
He seemed unconcerned. Perhaps it happened frequently. 15 minutes later, we were motoring to Ludlow's flat. I was very aware of my conviction to stay away from Gabe, but I conceded that this was different. This was part of the investigation and wasn't about staying in his house. Ludlow did not welcome us, but he didn't try to close the door in our faces this time. He knew he couldn't possibly keep Gabe out. He didn't invite us in either, however, and we had to question him while standing in the communal corridor.
Where were you last night?
Gabe began.
Why?
Ludlow shot back. He sounded nervous, but that could have been because he was once again under interrogation. He knew our presence meant we hadn't believed him yesterday.
Just answer the question.
I went out for a bite to eat at about 7. I returned at 8:50. The staff at the Crown and Thorn will remember me. One of the neighbours saw me come home.
He indicated the door to the flat opposite.
And after 9? Did anyone see you?
Mr. Ludlow hesitated, then shook his head.
I was here. Alone.
When was the last time you saw Tommy Allen?
Who?
You know who he is. One of the packers employed by the Royal Academy of Arts. We mentioned him to you yesterday.
Mr. Ludlow's face turned ashen, making the age spots in his cheeks stand out more.
If you don't answer the question, I'll have to ask you to accompany me to Scotland Yard.
I wasn't sure how Gabe was going to manage that. Tie Ludlow up and bundle him into the Vauxhall? Then I realized it was probably merely a tactic to frighten Mr. Ludlow into speaking. It worked.
I don't know who that man is. I've never met him, although I think I know the fellow you're talking about. I saw him watching Lady Stanhope and me in the gallery when we were talking.
Mr. Ludlow's throat moved with his heavy swallow.
Miss Ash, you believe me, don't you? We were colleagues once. You know I'm a man of my word.
He must be panicking if he was appealing to me. I know you to be a lot of things, I said, but trustworthy is not among them. Snobbery and rudeness seem to be more your thing.
I am trustworthy. I'm sorry if I ever treated you poorly. It's just the way of things, as an employer to an employee.
His wide eyes turned to Gabe.
You know how it is, Mr. Glass.
Gabe gave him a flat glare.
No.
Mr. Ludlow dragged a hand through his thin hair.
Listen.
He kept his voice low.
I admit that I identified the seascape as being magical for Lady Stanhope. I felt the magic in it the moment I got near it. When you saw us arguing, Miss Ash, I was demanding she give me what she promised in exchange for my advice. She was refusing to at that point, as she said I'd not told her something she hadn't worked out herself. She'd gathered from the throng attracted to the painting that it was magician-made. That night in the gallery, I threatened to inform the newspapers what she was doing if she didn't pay.
And what is she doing?
hiring me to identify magical paintings before the artists themselves knew. She'd swoop in, offer the market value to buy it or one of the artist's other works, then, when the magician became aware of their talent, the price would rise and she'd have a valuable painting on her hands. My involvement in her scheme began and ended with identifying the magic paintings.
How many paintings had you identified for her before the seascape?
None. That was the first time. I think she'd thought of the scheme after the theft of the Delaroche. It occurred to her that no one, including the original artist, had known for certain that it was magician-made until another magician identified the magic in it. She saw the potential if she could only buy the paintings early, and that required a magician to identify which ones contained magic.
He tapped his chest.
She knew I was a magician. She promised me a glowing reference if I helped her during the exhibition, as well as a small payment. After it was over, I was going to look for work as a chef.
Why didn't you tell us any of this yesterday?
Gabe asked. Mr. Ludlow released a shaky breath and visibly relaxed.
I wanted that reference. I needed it. I only have a few years left in me. I want to fulfill my lifelong dream of working in the grand kitchen of a luxury hotel. But the managers don't hire people they can't trust. A good reference is vital.
Now that he sensed Gabe believed him, his old confidence returned. Or rather his arrogance.
I haven't done anything illegal.
You've hindered an investigation by not answering our questions honestly when they were first asked.
Mr. Ludlow went to close the door, but Gabe put up his hand to stop it.
Tell me, has Lady Stanhope given you that reference yet?
She paid me the money, but has yet to give me the reference. Why?
Gabe merely smiled. He tugged on the brim of his cap.
Good day, Mr. Ludlow.
We walked off toward the elevator.
Don't tell her I said anything. Mr. Glass, I'm begging you not to mention we had this conversation.
The elevator was all the way down on the ground floor and would take an age to reach us. I'd rather take the stairs, I said. We headed down the staircase.
Miss Ash, please, make him see reason.
Mr. Ludlow leaned over the railing, shouting down the stairwell as we retreated.
I'll write an excellent reference for you if you can convince him not to speak to her. You'll be able to get any type of employment in domestic service that you want.
His voice echoed around the stairwell, strong at first, then fading to nothing. We closed the door to the building, ending his pathetic plea. Gabe opened the passenger door of the motor car, but his mind was clearly not on the task. He barely opened it wide enough for me to slide onto the seat. He didn't know the Delaroche was painted on magical canvas, not with magical paint, I said. Nor does Lady Stanhope, I'd wager. They think Delaroche was a magician like Arthur Partridge. With the motor's door still open, Gabe tapped a finger on the edge of the windshield. A small frown dented his brow. Gabe? He shook himself.
Sorry, I was thinking. We know Ludlow is a magician and have been assuming he was the only one. But other magicians could have seen the Delaroche and the seascape and recognized the magic in them.
But we assumed Ludlow is guilty because Tommy Allen worked it out. I told him yesterday that a magician is involved in the theft. He knew Ludlow was a magician, so here we are. I nodded at the building. Gabe's eyes flashed with triumph.
What if Tommy knew another magician, someone who is not Ludlow?
I tried to think it through. It would have to be a magician connected to the art world, someone Tommy knows saw both paintings. That limits it to another employee or an artist who delivered their work to Burlington House. Tommy had nothing to do with the public. That's still a lot of people, Gabe.
But it narrows the field. Who shall we question first, artists or employees?
Artists, I said. Specifically, someone we know is a magician.
Freddie Duckworth, the sculptor. Very well.
By the time Gabe cranked the car engine to life and took his seat behind the steering wheel, I changed my mind, however. Wait, I said as he pulled a lever that made the motor car's gears clunk. I think we should go to Burlington House. Tommy admitted he snuck into Mr. Bolton's office to find my address. What if he saw something there that indicated Mr. Bolton is a magician of some description?
Or the assistant, perhaps, if the employee files are kept in the outer office. I know a way we can find out before we confront them.
He turned the motor car into the traffic and sped off. I had to clamp my hand to my hat to stop it flying away. It was difficult to talk over the noise of the engine, so I was left to wonder where we were heading. It appeared to be back to Mayfair. The journey allowed me to think about the few occasions I'd been in Mr. Bolton's office. What evidence was there that he or Mr. Driscoll were magicians? What could Tommy Allen possibly have seen when he'd snuck in? And then it occurred to me. Gabe had also been thinking on the drive. The moment he switched off the engine outside his Park Street townhouse, he turned to me.
The assistant was acting oddly about being sick. Did you notice that? Could he have been well all along and lying about his illness?
He was acting oddly, but I can't think why or how it relates to this. He sighed.
True. Wait here. I'll be back in a few moments.
He went to open his door, but I caught his arm. Gabe, I think it's Mr. Bolton. I think he's a magician. Most likely rubber.
Rubber?
He had a lot of stamps in a box. They were all neatly arranged, lovingly almost. He seemed proud of them.
That sounds like a magician infatuated with his craft.
He smiled.
Hopefully, I can confirm your hunch.
Again, he asked me to wait. I watched him go, taking the front